is a production of Cornell University.
Okay, we're going to start off with the introduction of the voting members. Okay. Okay, David Long.
Here.
Ann.
Here.
Michaela.
Here.
Matt. And our colleague Max is at the Students of Color reception this evening. Giovanna.
Here.
John.
Here.
Franny.
Here.
Sonia.
Here.
Asma.
Here.
Alex.
Here.
Liz Rain.
Here.
Liz Newberry.
Here.
Adrian. Stephanie?
Here.
Ian?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tim?
Here. And Don?
Here.
Okay. And we'll now move to the approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes as printed? Seeing none, if there are no objections, the minutes will be approved as printed. And we'll now move into our presentation for today. So we're so glad that we have both our president and our dean students, Kent Hubble, here with us today. We're so grateful that they take out time to be with us and take time to answer our questions. So we're very grateful for the opportunity. And the format that we're going to take today is that we'll take small questions from the audience. So a few of you have already submitted questions to me ahead that you want to ask this afternoon. And we'll have time for other questions as well. So I'm going to go ahead and
thanks a lot, and thanks for having me here. So before we get into the questions, I just wanted to have a couple of comments to make about the presidential transition. I appreciate the fact that you let the provost box come here on the day that this was all rolling out that week. And it's a emotional time for me and my wife. We've been in higher ed. I've been in higher ed since my first faculty job was in 78, when many of your parents were learning to walk. And my wife's been in academics for 24 years as well. So it was a really hard decision for us. But at the end of the day, it was a chance for me to work in an environment very much like Cornell in a certain way. Very broad range of activities in the 19 museums and the National Zoo and 9 research centers. But the thing that's the most similar is that it covers the same incredibly broad swath of disciplines that a place like Cornell covers, everything from just the nature of my day. So earlier today we had a press conference about renewal of the NSF cooperative agreement for the synchrotron, $100 million over 5 years, and 130 jobs on the line. Super high, complex, high-tech jobs, investment in the word. That if such a thing wasn't here, there'd be nothing else around this part of the state, or even this part of the country, where professionals could work. All the way to a meeting I was having with undergraduate students, a couple of them interested in creative writing. All those things are represented on this campus, and there are some similarities in the Smithsonian. Nonetheless, it's a big, big change, and we negotiated with the Smithsonian that I'm not starting until July of 15. So we have tonight, we have a whole other year. I intend to be just as active up till the day the movers come as I am today. And so I want to thank you for the interactions we've had over the years, but if anything, I want to intensify our interactions with all the assemblies over the next year. There's a very active search for the next president going on, and there are things planned, things already on the schedule to have some open areas, open meetings where people can have input into the process, the 19-member search committee. The only part I'm going to have in the search is just meeting with the search committee at some point to give them my perspectives. And I already been public about what those perspectives are. So I hope you will, not that you'll ever do have any mercy on me or show me any kindness whatsoever, Dan. But, Mr. Earth Day, but I hope especially this year we can intensify on those issues of two types. Things that you think are evergreen issues that we always need to work harder on. In every assembly, those things tend to be communication, transparency, chance for meaningful input, voice, on the one hand. And then on the other hand, issues that you really would like to see come to some sort of conclusion before the transition. It doesn't mean we can definitely get it done, but I'm asking you to work with me in that regard. And I think this is our last time this semester, but you guys tend to be around like all the time. And I tend to be around almost all the time, so we'll have chances to interact. And thank you for welcoming me and being students. I'm also want to welcome the Dean of Grad College, Barb, a very, very important part always. And also Gina Giamattista, whose title I always get mixed up on, but who basically works in a way with every assembly, including the UA, to increase the effectiveness of communication. So please, as always, feel free to contact me directly. I will tend to share what you send me with Barb, with Kent, and or Susan Murphy, and with Gina. If you send me something and you don't want to share it, like you, I don't know, just want to say something, you know, confidential, let me know about that. Otherwise, I'll be open with those communications. And let's work together on things. So I'm ready to do my best to answer whatever questions and to wriggle out of under those that I can't do a good job on.
And so we'll start with the three that I have, and then we'll open the floor. So, Franny, do you have a question? Yes, yeah, please use the mic. So, if it's not, the green light isn't showing, you need to hit the mute button until the green light comes on.
Yes, good morning. Good afternoon. My question was regarding the recreation centers on campus. We had a meeting with the GCCI working group on wellness and mental health, and we discovered that there's not enough space on campus, which we all need for everybody to work out, and it seems to be a fairly low priority on campus. Even so that we really need these six for everybody to have an outlet for stress and study and so forth. So my question is, why is it such a low priority on campus?
Okay. I'm going to ask Kent to comment on that in a second, but I want to make a general comment on capital projects so that you know that the buck stops with me on some of this stuff. Since the recession, I personally have made it harder to do capital projects on campus, harder, in two ways. And I'm not apologizing for it, but I want to explain my position. It's always open for discussion. The first piece was the amount of debt that we had accumulated in doing a lot of things on the campus over the last 8 or 9 years. Not all those things directly impacted graduate or professional education. Vary depending on if you're a grad student in a building like this that was renovated, that would give direct benefit. If it's a more general benefit to the community, we tended not to do as many of those projects. We're working on one now for the Gannett Health Center, which, you know, I go there, many of you will perhaps go there. But things that did not have an obvious non-debt source of revenue, I stopped those from going forward until the university's balance sheet, that is, the debts that we have and the assets that could be utilized, liquid assets to pay those debts, get into a better balance. And so I'm sorry I slowed a lot of things down. I'm not sure if that was directly what slowed this down, but I'm betting it's part of the factor of it. That's one thing. And then the second thing is that we are in a position on campus where we do need more attention to wellness facilities. And Dr. Murphy and Dean Hubble and many others have made that case eloquently. And we're working through a sort of a slow, deliberative process. Very frustrating if you're here for just, you know, 5, 6, 7 years and you don't see the progress during that time that you're here. But there is progress going on toward developing the priorities in a certain order than developing funding plans The other thing that I did was, this is 4.5 years ago now, changed the guidelines for when a capital project could actually go forward so that you don't actually engage contractors and the formal construction process until bulk of the money is in hand and available, once again, to reduce the chance of going out and borrowing money and having to pay not just the principal, but the interest. So we do have a balanced budget now. We don't have a big surplus, but we are right at a balanced budget. My estimate of our margin now is that we have about 0.1% to the good, but that's better than 12% ready before Provost Fox began to change things in that way. So we're definitely in the right direction, and I have real optimism that there will be more flexibility and room for growth. But unfortunately, just to be very sanguine, it won't help people that have been here largely during this period. It's been really, really tough. You want to add anything to that?
Well, Dave, I know what I can add, except to say I'm totally sympathy with you. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't get my swimming in the morning. And I think probably the one thing we can look into is whether we can increase the throughput and utilization of existing facilities. I think that's well worth looking very carefully at, so that we can make best use of our existing facilities.
Thank you. Then John DeCastro.
My question is on non-traditional students, students like myself who come back to work to school after spending several years in the workforce and possibly even having families come with them and spouses and things. So over the past few years, there's been some good Cornell's been very good at opening up the dialogue, recognizing that non-traditionals are, increasing in number on campus, more and more are being admitted. This book maybe like 10 years ago or something. So is there any, is there a drive to do more, to provide financial support, recognize, the flexibility that non-traditional students sometimes need.
So I'm going to ask the dean to say a couple of things, but before she does, I want to say a couple of things on her behalf. On multiple occasions since she's become dean, Dean has brought this up to me and talked about a wide variety of things that have to change, a wide variety that goes beyond the resources that are at her disposal to deal with it. And before you answer it in more specific terms, I know that from my own experience interacting with her and also interacting with non-traditional grad and undergraduate students, and to some extent non-traditional professional students have tended to be more heterogeneous group, those going for MBAs and law school, and even vet degrees. But I know that she has thought a lot about career services, placement services, and the different kinds of financial arrangements. And so could you summarize a bit for us?
So just a few things. If by non-traditional you were talking about students with families, is that primarily what's underlying your question? So in the case of students with families, traditional or non-traditional, we do have an assistant dean for graduate student life, Jen Monet, who is heading up a work group that includes students, staff from across campus that's focused on the needs of professional and graduate students with families, and even not with children, but students who might have partners or spouses. So we're partnering with Human Resources on resources for students whose partners or spouses are interested in career opportunities, job opportunities, so we're doing much more on the front end. So when students are arriving on campus, they have resources in terms of job seeking for their partners. We're doing more in partnership with the Dean of Students Office on the websites and other resources that are made available for students with partners or with children. And then this particular work group, which is an outgrowth of the GCCI, is developing a set of recommendations. So my understanding is that they're meeting frequently, and they do have some recommendations in the works, and I'm awaiting to hear from them on that. Are you connected to that group?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I attended a meeting today.
Okay.
So, yeah,
so are they making progress?
Yeah.
And then just one other thing I wanted to add. Dean also has someone who works with postdocs. I think it may be Christine Holmes, maybe, on a work-life committee that we have, that Charlie Walcott, the former dean of faculty, and I convene maybe four times during the year. And that committee consists of faculty, grad students, postdoc representative, and staff. Because some of these issues are, if Barb and Kent would agree, are of common interest. For example, dual career hires in a small town where there's nothing else with the breadth of employment opportunities that Cornell has, as Barb said, working with HR. So if you have more thoughts about that, especially being on that work group, write me if you wouldn't, copy the dean, and I'll share with you, Kent. And let's make sure that we have our eye on the ball. I think the way the GDCI work groups were broken up, at least I couldn't think of any area that wasn't covered. But then the question that you asked is a key question: are we actually moving forward on it? So it's good to hear that there's some progress on it. Keep in our face about it. It's good.
Okay, thank you. And then next we have Ann Bobby Finley.
Should the next
testing
seek
to combat
student debt
and the unemployment
allotted
by states upon complete
graduation? Oh,
take
a second. I heard you say that. What was the second one?
Unemployment.
Among students.
After.
Among graduates, yeah. So I wish I had a really good answer to the second one. The second one is going to depend on... Well, let me step back a minute and give you some background and parts behind this. So, in any economic development and hiring situation, and I apologize to those of you in economics because it's going to be a child's garden of economics, but it's a real fluid supply-demand balance. And schools like Cornell have been educating a lot of grad students for a long time in a lot of fields. And in fact, I'm not sure if this is correct, but either the dean would know, either we have more graduate fields than anybody or more graduate fields than almost anybody. Yeah, doctoral field. So one question that comes up a lot when the college presidents get together is, are we giving up too many PhDs? In a climate in which those PhDs who are in fields that depend on government funding, at a time where the growth in government funding has basically stopped, hasn't gone backwards to a great degree, a little tiny bit, but it's not going forward, are we making a mistake by doing that? And my answer in the national scene is, I think we are giving up too many PhDs, given the funding environment, for that subset of PhDs that are going to go into academia. On the other hand, the track record of Cornell faculty, Cornell postdocs, and a little bit of data that I've seen Cornell grad students, as they are part of a process, part of a project that's applying, is a much better padding average than other people. So this announcement today from the NSF is an example. This is the only accelerator in the country that's supported by competitive funds from the NSF, as opposed to being a line item in the Department of Energy budget, something like that. So I want to encourage you that with a Cornell degree, obviously depending on the field that you're in and what your geographic constraints might be, that the placement rates in academia are better than they would be elsewhere. The next question is, when you get there, can you get the resources to do what you want? But it's a struggle. It's been a struggle always. but it's obviously more difficult now. For those who are going to go into fields other than full board faculty jobs, it just depends on the field, and it's so hard to know what they're telling you. There are some of those fields that are hiring a lot, some fields that are not hiring a lot. And I know that, for example, I was meeting with some people related to something in the hotel school space. It's just fresh in my mind. The placement rates there are, you know, very high throughout the educational layer. So it depends a lot on the field that we're going to. I think the biggest single factor that might change nationally that will happen in your professional lifetimes, if it happens, may not happen, is if employers or grad schools or professional schools will accept students without undergraduate degrees based on some tests of competency. So, for example, when I went to med school, I got a college degree, and then I went to med school. In the med school I went to at Northwestern in the early 70s, there was a program, you may still have it now, where you could start from high school, and in 6 years get an MD, and then you got a bachelor's degree. You did 2 years of stuff, and then you entered med school. And there's been talk since then in a lot of fields, although it was never materialized into anything. Could you imagine a day in which you could enter a field of employment or a professional school or a graduate school based on passing some test of competence, not necessarily based on a credential? And that's the hope of people who are pushing MOOCs as an important, you know, possible so-called disruptor of higher education. I think when MOOCs would become disrupted is if you could take a course like that and then following that course, take a test, pass a competency test, and then go on to the next step, whatever it is. And so if I were entering the field now, you know, I'd be thinking about that as you all become leaders in higher education. So that's that one. In terms of debt, it's too high. The average debt for undergraduates is in the, you gotta help me, national, the median is about 26,000, 29,000. And what do you think that's too much for a four-year degree? It's up to you. That's a measure of central tendency. That means that people who are borrowing a lot more. But in graduate professional school, it can be much, much higher. It took me 21 years to pay my loans off when I was at your stage of the game. At the time, that seemed like forever to me. And it would be longer now. And I've actually done that calculation to be around 5 or 6 years longer now, considering how much I would have had to borrow. And so I think there's three answers that will help us reduce the debt. One, and they're dependent on each other, one will be to get to the point where we can attenuate the cost of going to college, graduate school, or professional school. That will result if and only if we can attenuate the cost of running the university. And the question your colleague asked over here about recreational facilities, it was part of my motivation to cut back on debt accrual, because then the university, in order to get to zero every year, has to pay everything it always paid for, plus the principal on that, plus the interest that accrues. And so that's a gross example, but there's many other examples. And nibbled around the edges of that in the university since the recession. I eliminated two vice presidencies. That obviously is a small amount of money compared to the overall budget, but I think it's in the right direction. And the staff workforce has been reduced by a very substantial amount, by over 8%. It's a very, very difficult thing to do. And all that did, it did a lot, it attenuated the rate of rise of the cost of running the university. And if we can find smart ways, and those of you who will now enter academia and you'll be leaders soon, if you could think about ways smarter than my generation has done in attenuating this rate of rise of the cost of opening the door in the morning, that would really be good. And then the last thing will be to come up with other revenue sources that would help offset the cost. Philanthropy for graduate fellowships, one of the things that Dean has been encouraging me in fundraising efforts that I make, which is like a third of my time, is to think more about graduate fellowships, not only undergraduate, even scholarships. And it depends on the field, obviously, it depends on what you're doing and how you're supporting yourself. But those are the three ways that I've been thinking about it. In the short term, I think nationally you'll see some attenuation of the rate of rise of tuition because of pressure from states and pressure from governing boards. But it's going to be an attenuation of the rate of rise. I don't think there will be a reduction in most of those areas. And so the debt is a big issue, no question about it. And we are putting more effort into philanthropy now and having some success. We continue to have the most problems funding international undergraduate students, undocumented students, and people in areas that are not considered sort of topical or timely. And I actually spend more of my time working on those areas. It takes more effort to yield some result. So it's a really important issue.
Thank you. We have time for one or two other questions.
I have a question. Your breakout question.
Okay, sure.
So one of the questions that come up in a lot of our breakout questions is this idea that we are a land-grant institution, but we have this shaky relationship with the city that we are most intimately in living in, particularly with regard to housing and other infrastructural components that really impact graduate student life. I was wondering how you might encourage the next president of the university to strengthen relationships with Ithaca, that graduate housing might be cheaper and other sorts of infrastructure components.
Thanks, and I appreciate the email you sent me sort of filling me in on other issues. I really appreciate that. So, first of all, I don't think we have a shaky relationship with the city. I think there is a natural tension in any college town between, especially a research university that has all these sources of money. I spent some time, not enough, meeting with people in the town. For 7 years, I've been meeting with a group that calls itself the Local Leaders of Color. We met this morning down at GIAC, the Greater Activity Center, and understanding just enormous pressures and differences that different communities in town are dealing with. And so you can just imagine if you're in a community that has a high unemployment rate, even though the overall town unemployment rate is low, you can be part of a particular community or employment sector, say food service workers who tend to do more certain seasons of the year, and say during holiday seasons or around commencement here, everybody comes in town, all the restaurants are jazzed up and so on. And then when things fade a little bit later, some of those people predictably will get laid off. They're seasonal workers. How they perceive tomorrow morning's newspaper will say that we got a $100 million grant from the NSF, $20 million a year for 5 years. And, if you don't eat, live, and breathe this stuff all the time, you might wonder, well, why can't some of that money be shared more than with the people who got the grant? We understand the grant is a contract for the federal government restricted to that use. But we keep seeing, people see announcements of these big gifts, big grants. We're over $4.5 billion in the campaign now, getting very close to our expanded goal, maybe 18 months ahead of time. People have been very generous. And yet those gifts are almost all restricted as well. So I think it's totally understandable, at least everywhere I've worked, in both college towns like Iowa City and Ithaca, and also bigger cities, Chicago, Los Angeles, that people are, wonder why there can't be more meeting of the minds. I don't want to wait for the next president. I want to keep on working on these issues now because I do have relationships in the town. And I think that the set of problems that relate to the differences in revenue sources and employment security on a campus like this that has so many revenue streams, and the employment security and the revenue sources in the general economy are so wildly different that I would predict there's always going to be some of that tension. And I think the best we can do is not be hypersensitive about it. I know you're not. I'm saying me and the people, in Day Hall, so to speak, should not be hypersensitive about it. Everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I have a very good relationship with the mayor and the town supervisor. We meet, quietly, privately. We also meet in public sometimes. And, we just have to keep talking about these issues. The biggest difference, though, is all the stuff that we can bring to the table to support ourselves despite the debt and despite all of the shortfalls that we have in construction and everything. We have resources that, are not to be believed. compared with people in the general economy, in most parts of the general economy. It may not be true of Wall Street and some other, you know, niche areas. But we have many, many sources of revenue. And we have to just continue to find ways to share what we can share, which is millions of dollars a year. We didn't step back on any of those during the recession, which was because I thought it was important not to. But also to find ways that don't involve the transfer of cash, that we can really be helpful. And, for example, I know Dan is going to be, after I leave here, and I'm sorry I'll miss it, talking about Earth Day and some things, the Climate Action Plan. And this group has worked with folks at Help Me, Ithaca College and elsewhere in the community, on the Tompkins County and broader group.
Oh, the Climate Protection.
Climate Protection. I always forget all these acronyms. But there's an example where we can engage with people outside the campus in ways that don't require a direct financial investment, except all of us collectively. So I think we should keep working on that now. I really do. And if you have ideas, those you should send them to me.
Okay. Yeah. If you need any tips on dog parks or restaurants in D.C., you should let me know.
Yeah. It turns out that our dogs are so big that the whole district is too small for our dogs. So we'll figure a way to deal with that.
Okay.
One more show.
Okay, we'll take one more. David, do you have your hand up?
Yeah, I guess a question you sort of alluded to some of this related to the Synchrotron, but I guess I was wondering what your would you see your guys' role in sort of advocating for funding of sort of these bigger scale graduate facilities. So for example, as you probably know, the Cornell Lab facility, their funding is cut and they're sitting at an end of next year closing, which would be a huge hit to both Cornell and a lot of graduates in this room and the department to represent. So I guess I was curious with where you see your role in advocate sort of externally
as
you're looking for.
Yeah, David, thanks. As you may know, we were in the same position in 2012 about CHESS, about Synchrotron. In fact, it looked like it was going to go away. In fact, I think it was going to go away. And so I've been following this with Dr. Berner and others very closely. It's unbelievably important, and as you alluded to, not just for Cornell, it's a national and international climate facility. And so this is something where I'm on the front line, doing a direct advocacy lobbying in Washington, direct lobbying. I fill out a lobbying report when I meet with federal officials, state officials, city officials, and so on, to make public my efforts in that regard. And then it's got to always be a very important part of leadership, not just me, but other leaders here interact a lot with people with local, state, regional and national governmental levels. And so we have to do that at the same time as was done in the case of this particular facility and CHESS in the past. The university sometimes has to invest money if it looks like there may be a light at the end of the tunnel, and that was also done in this case. And then the third one is very, very important. And I don't know if you, David, but I know other grad students have been involved in this. Maybe that when students go to lobby in Washington, we are part of that group that went. It's unbelievably more effective than when students go. It just is. And there's two reasons. One is they expect me to come and say that, but I mean, I do say it and try to make cogent arguments. But, you know, it sounds corny, but you're the future. You're a constituent right now, and you're the future of the country. You're a future employer, directly or indirectly. And so, to whatever extent the GPSA chooses to exert some of its efforts related to advocacy, direct advocacy, either with grad student organizations elsewhere, on its own, I urge you sometime, if you think it makes sense, to invite the new Vice President for University Relations. We just hired, he's starting his like fourth week or something, just got here. And his name is Joel Molina, M-A-L-I-N-A. He's really sure that he was the CEO of a lobbying firm in Washington, communications expert, and he's been working with us already very, very effectively. And then you can just call him and talk to him, but you also may want to sometime talk about graduate student advocacy. It's very, very effective, as is undergrad advocacy. But grad or professional student advocacy is a special thing because it's a select population. About 30% of Americans have a college degree. Only 30%. We live in a sort of inflation from college. And then, of course, a lower percentage has a graduate or professional degree. So you guys bring a special voice to the political conversation. And I'm glad to work with you and Joel in developing talking points. But they ought to be your feelings and your agenda. And I guess the thing I'm saying is I'm going to keep going. I'm glad to carry the water for, you know, tomorrow's leaders. But you guys are very, very effective. So I hope you'll do that.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming to visit us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Feel free to keep Dean Hubble, Dean Muth, and Gene as long as you like.
Okay, we'll move right along. We have a lot on the agenda today. So we're going to have presentations from our graduate trustee candidates. They'll each have four minutes. We'll start off with Anne Ivy Finley.
That a lot of people don't get to hear about. So
One of my top priorities is going to be facilitating better communication between the undergraduate colleges and the graduate departments so we can all really keep a hand in our learning experience here and achieve it to be the best that it can be for us personally. On my second point is safety. I think we've all been pretty alarmed by the amount of on and off campus crime that there's been recently. I personally was a victim of a break-in attempt in my apartment recently and had to move. So one of the things that I'm going to advocate for is a peer-to-peer exchange of information about safe off-campus housing options and better information about how to make the place where you're living safer. On that same regard, I think that the university really needs to take head-on the problem of sexual violence on campus. And I think that starts with preventative measures before freshmen even arrive on campus for their first year here as undergrad and an education program that continues throughout. And on my last point, I think affordability is obviously a huge issue. Talking about students out with the president, I know that a lot of my classmates in law school are going to be graduating with over $200,000 in debt, and if you don't have a job in that happens, that's a pretty scary thought. So I think one of the things that needs to be done in the Board of Trustees is just raising awareness about how much money that really is and how long it takes to pay off and the detrimental results from that. I mean, not being able to work in the city that you want to start your career in, you have to go back home, live with your parents, if you don't have a job, that could happen to graduate students as well as undergraduates. And I think with my experience working in government and politics, I would love to be on the government affairs committee if I'm elected to that board and bring my expertise to help lobby Congress the way that the president was talking about to pass financial aid legislation and to prevent some of the scary measures that are in front of Congress right now, such as capping the amount of debt that can be forgiven if you've been working for the government, and instead encouraging some of the bills that are in front of Congress right now, such as Senator Al Franken's bill about standardizing the financial aid letter so that when you apply to school, you get the same letter from every single one, you can actually compare the amount of money that you're being offered and the amount of debt that you're going to be left with at the end. So thanks very much for your time, and I'm happy to take any questions for the first time. I'm sorry for that, but I'll
go. We have time for that, but thank you.
Yeah, so if you want to follow up, if you want to give them your email address quickly, then they can potentially follow up with you.
We actually both have the Snappy Fridays about
now. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, my link's to my Facebook page, so you can send me a message if you have any questions.
Okay, thank you both. And at this time, we're going to present Dan Goff, who is our Director of Sustainability, and he's going to present to us some of the university's initiatives.
Thanks. And I'm here with my colleague, Ralph Stewart. He's got his hand up. Ralph is from Environmental Health and Safety. And yes, as President Stewart mentioned, tomorrow is Earth Day. Can anybody see President Stewart's Earth Day sound article? Oh, one person. All right. President just wrote an article about the sun came out today about Earth Day and all the things going on. But what I have only 10 minutes to talk to you and try to make this really succinct. There's a new initiative that's being piloted this year that is going to have a direct role for graduate students to get very engaged in a new way in reducing the university's carbon footprint, helping the colleges save energy, and hopefully building your careers, particularly many of you who are in labs. I'm curious, how many of you are in labs? Okay, so over half of you. So I think this may be a bit more interest to those who are working in labs, but to be honest, if any of you are interested in our carbon initiatives, carbon reduction initiatives, this might also be of interest to you. So what we've been piloting this year is a green lab certification program. And this has been tried at universities around the country. And this is a way for laboratories to do self-assessment of where they're using energy and how they're having an environmental impact through the research that goes on and creating kind of a customized way of reducing their environmental footprint with a pretty strong emphasis on energy reduction. So just to give you a sense of the impact that labs have on their carbon footprint,
kind of in the context of what many of you are aware of, which is interest by the faculty senate and the president himself to accelerate our carbon reduction goal to 2035, which would mean, you know, aggressive action on how we use energy today, and really an institutional transformation that hopefully can be phased in a way that will benefit the university and not as much risk to the university, which I think sometimes people are concerned about for change. So just some background here. Laboratories use about 50% of the university's energy. What does that mean in our Tompkins County region? That means just lab ventilation alone is about 15% of Tompkins County's carbon footprint. You can just think about that as total energy use. So it's a huge impact of how we do business here at a research university. And within that context, I'm not going to try to use the latest one. Ventilation is the largest single user of energy in the lab. So just to give you a sense, one fume hood is equivalent to 3 households in annual energy use. Cold storage is the second largest energy user. So any action we make on how we use the sashes on our fume hoods and how we take care of the cold storage has a huge impact on our footprint as a university. So what we've done is identified kind of the key actions that grad students, postdocs, faculty can take in their labs. Just to give you a sense of how the Green Lab certification program is organized, it's in these 4 categories. And so there's very specific things that labs can do, or in some cases don't do, consistently. And these have big impacts. So just lowering the sash of your fume hood. Does anybody want to guess how much energy reduction that creates when you lower your fume hood sash?
Two-thirds?
Yeah, it's about 75% less energy is being used when you lower the fume hood on your fume hood sash. So as well, I mentioned refrigeration. So a minus 80 freezer, that's about, I think, the amount of energy of one household. So just a single negative 80 refrigeration unit, a freezer unit, is the same amount of energy as an American household. So if you can keep your coolers and your freezers running efficiently by cleaning the coils, which is something that doesn't always happen, not always understood, the impact and the benefit of that, you can keep those boxes from using even more than one household. In engaging your peers, we found a lot of the research are saying that the best way that we can have an impact on this is not by the Director of Sustainability coming and telling you about it, it's by you hearing it from each other. And there are a lot of you that care a lot about the university's carbon footprint and care about kind of our responsibility globally in terms of the environmental issues facing the world. So indeed, hearing it from each other, you know, is a well-tested way to get the word out. And green chemistry is the last area where we know there's ways that we can look at the research processes that we're using and identify ways when appropriate to reduce the environmental impact of just the research processes. So this is essentially an outline of what the Green Lab Certification Program is and where that... we've got 4 areas, or 4 levels, excuse me, where you can earn points. Again, it's a self-assessment that labs can do. We've got 2 labs already certified in the College of Engineering. We're doing a pilot. We've got a few in the pipeline. And we're going to roll this program out to the entire campus in the fall. And so that's where the opportunity for grad students to take a much more active role comes into play. So we've developed a program that some of you who have a piece of paper that says Think Big, Live Green in the top left-hand corner have kind of the one-page overview about, but we'll send this around to everybody. And we're essentially looking for feedback from the GPSA. We're looking for your engagement in helping us roll this out next year. But to give you some background on this, it's not all you have, this one pager in front of you. What we've developed with Environmental Health and Safety is an 8-hour certification for grad students to become green lab leaders. And in those 8 hours of training, after you've gone through that, you'll be able to identify greening opportunities in specific labs, go through the process of prioritizing those opportunities, and actually have a sense of how you might implement some of those changes to reduce energy expenditures and the carbon footprint. The actual curriculum would be a combination of some online learning, some in-class learning, and some, really the majority of those 8 hours is actually walking around different types of labs with the H&S staff and really getting to see how energy is getting used and how we're having an environmental footprint through different lab activities. And through that process, then you would actually get a certification from the H&S to be a green lab leader. You could continue to work just in your own areas, or you could actually become part of a team of students, the grad students we're trying to develop, to educate each other across different fields. So, as I said, we don't have much time today, so this is just hopefully the beginning of a conversation with the GTSA. We're specifically looking for feedback on the model of the training program. We don't want to design something that you think would be, that grad students wouldn't be interested in, or that 8 hours is too much time. That kind of curriculum feedback we're really interested in at this phase before we roll it out. We'll be looking for pilot participants for the fall. So some of you might be interested, some of you might know colleagues and friends that would be interested in being part of the pilot Green Lab Leader Certification. And we're specifically looking for to host Green Lab networking events at the Big Red Barn starting in the fall. So we'd love to co-sponsor some events like that with the GPSA. They might not all have to do with kind of broad Green Lab issues, but they might have to do with other sustainability topics. But we just want to start hosting some events at the Big Red Barn. So that's just, as I said, beginning the conversation with all of you about the role that grad students can play in reducing our carbon footprint. And I don't know, I may have used up all my time.
We'll take a couple of minutes for a few questions.
Okay.
Two questions. One is there anything in the works to address the use of plastics in particular, especially in like microbial labs that depend on using sterile materials, but they'll go through a lot of plastics. Then the other one was certain sometimes lack like particular constraints of the facility make it even more difficult to address some of these issues, things like issues with ventilation, where you're say dependent on the hood to provide ventilation for a room containing a mitigating freezer, which is somewhat problematic. And I'm just kind of curious if you thought about how you would address those two pieces.
Yes. So I'll take a few comments and Ralph may have some more specifics. But so the plastics, you're just referring to plastics in general. There's one initiative that's been around pipette recycling, and one of the challenges that we've actually come into, not specifically pipette recycling, but plastics recycling in general with the labs, is the issue of hazardous waste. I've had some really hard conversations with our, our recycling manager for campus has had some really challenging kind of decisions to make about recycling in labs, because what's happening is people are actually ambitious about it even, and putting essentially what could be considered or is hazardous waste in recycling bins. And so we're actually getting a lot of pressure to scale back recycling in the labs because of that contamination issue, because most people don't know this, that recycling in Tompkins County is hand-sorted when it gets to the county office. So essentially you've got people who are not equipped to deal with hazardous waste, essentially with sharps, with other chemicals that they're not aware of. So I think that's kind of also a segue to your second point about the safety, kind of efficiency, energy efficiency balance. That's exactly why we teamed up with the H&S on it, because in some cases there's total synergy. Reducing your stash is actually can be safer in some cases, and also saving energy, but there's many situations where it's much more complex. And that's actually exactly why the Green Lab certification, the actual self-assessment for the lab does, is customizable, so that you can get points in different areas based on kind of where your lab can grow or where your lab can change without compromising the safety of the lab. But I'm sure I'll have some more specifics to say about that.
The only thing I would add is that we're part of a national Green Labs network, campuses all over the country, and Cornell is several steps ahead of most campuses. And one of the top challenges putting out our facilities is true, but Cornell has that actually pretty well organized. That's why I'm here. I was recruited to be part of the Ventilation Green Labs Ventilation Program. And we're getting to the point now where we're going to get past the facility issues and the behavior issues in the laboratory. And not all campuses have reached that point yet. So we are continuing to work hard on the facility side of things, and we're doing it pretty well. But we do need outreach in order to better educate the lab community.
Hopefully, we answered. We got the beginning of an answer. I think there was somewhere next to you.
I'll take one more.
I don't know if you thought that those 8 hours would be more like a one Saturday or something like 4 weeks of 2 hours, or how do you see if from your side it would be easier, and if that's because they maybe seem to see it something else. Maybe not that.
Yeah. So the way that we've got it divided up right now is it's about an hour.
Like 1.5 day.
1.5 day.
And a couple of 2 hours. So the overall concept is about an hour of online information, about half a day in class, and then a couple of minutes, and the other 4 hours would be organized around your own schedule to if you visit the other laboratory. So it would be as flexible as possible. So it's basically a half day commitment plus flex up minutes.
And preferably on Saturday? Perhaps. Okay. Great. Well, that's all the time we have for today.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to quickly go through committee updates. So I ask you to keep it to a minute or less. And Brian has a couple from the fifth board. Okay, as we've been commenting for a while, we're going to put together a cheat sheet for the second changes. And so you may have picked it up today, but if not, I'll also be sending it out after the meeting. Basically, this is just an overview of what the important points about the RAPS rate split. For a conversation that you can have with your chair or DGS about it. And we have also made a couple of possible questions you could ask in order to guide that conversation. And so we really hope that our field representatives will take us up and facilitate a conversation. Other than that, I'm going to do some... Okay. Oh. I just really quick, I wanted to give an end-of-the-year summary for field representation, and I'm sorry I'm over here. That I have switched to PowerPoint. In any case, we had about 73 field representatives filled by the end of the year, which is really showing an upward trajectory for us filling those field representative positions. In any case, I'll also be sending out a survey to this next week or in the next couple weeks to encourage participation from field. So basically, if you're interested in staying on as a field representative, letting us know that you're interested, or also letting us know where the gaps might be for next year. Okay. So just a quick overview. These are, again, two of the new committees which have come out just this semester, or even like about a month ago. So one is the Council on Aging Prevention, and this committee is charged with working on the prevention, intervention, and response to aging at Cornell. And the other one is Board Safety, which implements the recommendations of the Board Safety Report with a focus on four primary elements of education, infrastructure, alternative, and enforcement. And they said that particularly there are people who enjoy that board around Cornell and Ithaca, and they're still looking for members now in case you felt like you weren't good enough at the end of the semester. And now I'm just going to go through a quick summary. So we have seven committees total, and this year we have one new committee for staff as well on the general side, which is diversity and international students. And we've got 3 to 15 members per committee. In terms of our external committees, we have 36 committees to which we send members, of which 8 are here this year, which is 56 positions total. At the moment, we have only 8 unfilled. And of course, we already passed a resolution earlier this year, which updated the external committees because a number of them were defunct, and we had a number of new additions. In the future, I would suggest that maybe the GPSA would try to encourage external bodies to communicate with the GPSA body as a whole rather than asking for members, because I think that might be more efficient than continuing to spread us
That's a little bit of external phase.
Thank you. Operations?
Just one point with the topic of confusion if we're voting on CHID, just a reminder that appropriations and finance will run from January to December. That would be necessary to vote for this year.
Finance the change is happening next year. Appropriations, yes. Yeah. Thank you, Ian. Communication?
It's been a great year working on the communications committee, kind of under the darkness, as it were. But I hope that there's interest in your field on joining the communication committee next year in social media and email and posters. Oh my! So please spread the word.
Thank you. Finance?
We met for the last time last Thursday. I believe at the end of the year we have about $40,000 left, which is right where we kind of targeted to be, so that leaves $40,000 approximately for summer budget and $3,000 rollover for next year to give us a little cushion. We have our annual funding day coming up, which we will review all the budgets for next academic year, so all the annual budgets that were submitted on time for next academic year. Just as a plug, if anyone's interested in maybe getting involved in the finance committee next year, that's a great event to come to, and we also need help specifically. So email me if you may want to come and kind of see what we do, reduce the budget and eat free lunch. And then just to sort of pair what Elizabeth said, this is a general rule. I think the GCSA funding or the GCSA FC charter requires that field organizations receive funding, then representatives to GCSA these meetings. So we haven't been great about enforcing it this year, but it's something we've been talking about being a little bit more strict with next year. So obviously those who are here continue to come, those who are not here listening to this. Are recording this? I don't know. Most people continue to come, okay.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. Graduate professional student programming.
So we had an epic week this week on Thursday. We have our last interschool next year from 7 to 10. We are making chemistry, chemical engineering, and city and regional planning, because we read boring. Like I said, should be epic. And on Saturday, there is the grad ball at Museum of the Earth. We sold a good number of tickets so far. There are still tickets on sale, and they'll be on sale they'll be on sale online until the event, and then we're really aiming to sell all the tickets before the event, because then if you max out all the numbers and people will show up all dressed up, it's an awkward situation. I did find out some good news. Both shuttle buses will be karaoke buses, not just one.
You mentioned, or Poster mentioned, that the shuttle buses would have pickup stops in downtown campus, or college town and campus, so like where?
Yeah, so for everybody who buys a ticket online, which should be everybody, they'll receive an email reminding them to bring money to their cash bar, and also where specifically the pickup stops are, so you will have it in writing. There will be one in Hasbro, East Hill Plaza, in front of College Town, Bagels in College Town, and near Madeline, downtown, on that side of the common.
Oh, and then they just like keep.
And they'll be circulating throughout the entire night from 6:30 to 11:30. And I spoke with the guy who runs the shuttle today, and he said that's about 20-minute intervals. So, pretty awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Okay, advocacy.
So we handed in our report today to the board and the graduate school. The summary of kind of what we did this year and what came out of the data we got. Overall, I think it was a great discussion. And we need to force some policies, I think, that would be a step for next year. I feel some of the things that came up haven't come up before, like time off and time away from your research seems to be something that so far has only been discussed with your chair, and there's no guideline by the university, and that seems to be that something that leaves us fairly vulnerable. So I think that would be possibly something that can be pushed next year.
Thank you, Bernie. Faculty awards.
So last meeting I updated you on the nomination period for the faculty award. Faculty award committee reviewed nominations and we met and deliberated. And before I announce the winners, I would very much like to thank my wonderful committee, Therese Chu, Daniel Citrin, Alex Coots, Katie Hootman, and Frederick Diga, who made it a very smooth and enjoyable process. And with that, I'd like to congratulate the 2014 award winners for the GPSA Awards for the Teaching, Advising, and Mentoring of Graduate Students. Drum roll. The winners are Professors William Fry from the Department of Anthropology and Natural Biology. Kathleen Rasmussen from the Division of Nutritional Sciences, and Kelly Zamudio of the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology.
Thank you, Adrian. Okay, and then the Berkeley International Students, I know that both Chavez and Matt are at the Student of Color reception tonight, so if they're not here and didn't send any announcements, I think we're good there. Okay, so now on new business, we have our election of officers. So today we're going to be electing both the exec board and committee chairs, as well as our representation to the UA. So point up the guest here, but we'll start off. I'll go to the clarify. So we'll have current voting members and current Philip reps will be voting today, just to clarify. And as is the tradition, after we elect president, they will take on, preside over the rest of the meeting. So, yeah, I can't believe the year's gone by this fast, but, a little emotional. Okay, so we'll start off with president, and at this point, I'll take nominations for the role of the president.
I nominate Richard Bolger.
Do you accept?
Seconded.
Okay. And so are there any other nominations? If not, then we'll go straight to just a voice vote to confirm Richard. So all those who are in favor, aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Okay, the ayes have it. And please tell me that in the answer. Be patient with him. He's going to be presiding over the rest of the meeting. And also, just want to say, get behind him, support him in every way that you can, because he's going to be speaking for you, so do all that you can to help him and to encourage him. But again, let's give a hand for this.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for your vote of confidence, and I hope that I will not disappoint because my role is present. So, I guess we will move on with the elections. So, next, we have Executive Vice President. Are there any nominations for Executive Vice President?
I nominate Catherine Wong.
Do you accept?
Yes.
Are there any further nominations? Seeing none, we will move to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
And all those opposed? Okay, then let's congratulate Catherine Wong. Alright, and up next we have Vice President of Operations. Are there any nominations?
I nominate Andrew Gardner.
Do you accept?
I accept.
Seconded.
Are there any further nominations?
I nominate Todd because he takes his position next
How do you accept?
I appreciate it, Bill. Thank you.
Okay, are there any further nominations? Seeing none, we will move to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, congratulations, Andrea. Next, we have a position of counsel. Any nominations?
I nominate Nicole Barrett.
Do you accept?
I do.
Any further nominations? Seeing none, we will move to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? All right, congratulations. Nicole. Okay, now moving on to the chair for the advocacy committee. Are there any nominations? Okay, do you accept? Okay, so no one of the first two accepted, so...
Well, they didn't accept it as a team anyway.
Okay, any further nominations? Okay, so then. Okay. So, seeing no further nominations, we'll move to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, congratulations, Paul. Okay, moving on to the Finance Committee. Are there any nominations for Chair of the Finance Committee?
I'd like to nominate Pauline Weider.
Pauline, do you accept?
Yes.
Seconded.
Any further nominations? Seeing none, we will move to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, congratulations, Pauline. Okay, moving on to the Programming Board. Are there any nominations for the Chair of the Programming Board?
I would like to nominate Ellen Taylor.
And Ellen is not
a participant,
she does accept.
Okay, are there any further nominations? Seeing none, we'll move to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
She is from the law school, so she's
a member of the fire, you can say she's from the law school, she could be here tonight.
Can I make a nomination?
Yes.
I nominate Christy.
I respectfully decline.
Okay. Any further nominations? Okay then, so we will move again to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. So, congratulations, and we will let her know. Okay, so next, Chair of the Faculty Award Committee.
I would like to nominate Daniel Sitton, Chair of the Faculty Award.
Yes.
Any further nominations? Okay, seeing no more nominations, we'll move to a voice vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, congratulations, Daniel. Alright, next up is the Diversity International Committee. Are there any nominations for the Chair of the as Diversity International Committee. Okay, so we'll, if there are no nominations, we will have to fill that position next year. So moving on. Communications. Are there any nominations for the chair of the Communications Committee?
I would nominate
Megan.
I second.
Jacob. Any other nominations? Seeing none, we'll move to a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Right. Congratulations. Okay, we will now move to nominations for the University Assembly reps.
How many reps are there?
Two. Okay, so there are two positions available. Are there any nominations?
I nominate Jeffrey Bird. And I also like to nominate Cora Beth.
Okay. Any further nominations? Seeing none, we will go ahead and move to a voice vote to approve both of them for the positions of President of the University Assembly. All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? All right. Congratulations. Okay, so that concludes the elections for this evening. So now we'll go ahead and move into open forum. Is there anyone who would like to speak in open forum?
Point of information. Right, am I allowed to make announcements now?
Yes.
So first thing about. And that means that the physics department or the program you're running is going to be hosting a STEM open for graduate students, by graduate students, so you don't have to be present. Everyone in graduate school is invited to attend, but in particular we are looking for people from the STEM disciplines, so that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, to come give talks. So I have five of STEM, like as an option. I really appreciate you taking them to your department and putting them on people in June.
When is it?
It will start in June. These will be 15 to 30 minute talks, and it will be weekly, and there will be free food.
I like the lots of nodding with the free food and the national shopping. I'd like to make an announcement.
First of all, I'd like to thank you guys for the opportunity to serve this year. Secondly, I'd like to invite you to the reception in the Big Red Barn for all members of the GPSA. We have a certificate of appreciation for our great members and select a really sound public member. So there's also lots of free food and there's good drinks. So please join us.
Is that right now?
Yeah, it's literally like walk over to the Big Red Barn.
Yeah. Oh, someone's down there.
Hi. So the vet school is having a dog wash this Sunday. And if you, like me, have a very hard time washing your pet by yourself, oh, and nail trimming, also, that I can do by myself, but dog washing is hard. So stop by the... it's like the circular driveway, like on the, not the hospital side of that school, but on Tower Road. Stop by from 11 to 3 this Sunday, the 27th, and get your dog washed for real cheap, like $5. So.
What about cash?
I don't think it's going to go away. Just walk our cash so we can.
I think that we should give the museum a round of applause to thank them for their work this year.
Motion to adjourn?
Seconded.
We are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.